have quipped about where else you could damn someone to, but the rage in Levi's voice warned him off. He stepped up and saw the thick, cloudy green liquid, his nose stung from the sharp chemical odor. "What is it?"
"Some sort of toxic crap," Levi said. "They're using this spot as a dumping ground."
"Who?"
"Crooks from upstate. We found stuff like this before."
Jack said, "Better than dumping it in some river, I guess."
Levi glared at him and pointed to a barrel on its side. The sand near its top was wet with gunk. "That one's leaking. It sinks into the groundwater, and guess who gets their water from wells out here? We do, but who cares about pineys?"
Jack understood some of the reaction. Kids at school tended to rag on the pineys, make fun of their clothes, joke about the brother-sister connections, but Jack wasn't one of those and didn't like being lumped in with them. No fair. Another look passed between Levi and Elvin, and then Levi shrugged.
"Forget it. Elle says you're okay."
"Fine, but Jack hadn't heard Elle say anything."
"We should tell the cops," Jack said. "My sister used to date a deputy, and..."
Levi and Elvin and the girl were shaking their heads. Same direction, same speed, moving as one. Jack was getting creeped.
"Uh-uh," Levi said. "Cops ain't gonna go patrolling the pines, looking for someone they don't know who might or might not come back."
"Oh, they'll be back." Levi's eyes narrowed.
"How do you know?"
"Because they marked the path with reflectors."
"Yeah? Show us."
As Jack reached for his bike, Elvin pointed to the weird buggy.
"With us."
"You're old enough to drive?" The two boys laughed.
"Plenty old enough to drive," Levi said.
Elvin never said much at school and didn't seem to have much more to say out here.
"Just not old enough for a license."
"Aren't you afraid?" Jack began, then cut himself off. Afraid of being caught? Out here? By what? The Jersey Devil and a Sheriff's Stetson? Stupid question. He spotted a Piney Power sticker on the rusted rear bumper.
"What's that mean?"
Levi shrugged.
"Some folks hereabout think pineys should get organized and vote and all that." He glanced at Elvin. "We just like the sound of it."
Elvin laughed.
"Yeah, sounds cool."
The girl said nothing, simply stared at him. Jack gave the buggy another once over. Without sides, a top, or even a roll bar, it had to be the most dangerous car he'd ever seen. He'd be risking his life in that thing.
"Well," Levi said, "you riding or not?"
Jack couldn't wait. Wouldn't miss it for the world. As he seated himself on the rear sofa, the albino girl scooched away and squeezed against the far end. Her pink gaze never wavered from his face.
"I can't see him."
"Yeah?"
Levi turned in the front sofa and looked at Jack.
"Elle says he's okay."
"But I can't see him."
Jack waved his hand between them, and she flinched.
"You can see me." "That's Ceree," Levi said. "She's talking about a different kind of seeing."
Jack was going to ask what he meant, but then Elvin started the engine with a roar. Trying to ignore Ceree's unwavering stare, he directed Elle down the path, following his own bike tracks till they came to the firebreak trail. Elle turned around and drove back. Levi was right. The Burlington County Sheriff's Department didn't have the manpower to stake out Old Man Foster's land, or even this one path. Could be weeks before the dumpers made a return trip.
Had to be a way to make them give themselves away. Or better yet,
an idea began to form. "What's down that way?" Jack said, pointing left as they approached the first fork.
"More of the same," Levi said.
"Why?" "Wondering if there's a spong nearby. The deeper and wetter, the better."
"I know a cripple,"
Ceree said, still staring. Elle followed her directions through a few more forks that left Jack totally disoriented. You know where we are, right?
Ceree rolled her eyes.
Okay, dumb question to ask a Piney, but at least she seemed to be relaxing a little. A few minutes later, she said,
Right up here.
Elle rolled to a stop before a 30-foot-wide cripple, a water-filled depression half surrounded by white cedars. Without the cedars, it would have been called a spong. Jack couldn't help smiling when he saw it.
Yeah, this'll do.
Do what?
When he told them, their eyes lit. Ceree even smiled.
I still can't see you, she said. But I think you're okay.
Weird. Too weird. Chapter 2. What's wrong with inbreeding? Jack said, as he spooned some niblets into the well he'd made in his mashed potatoes. His mother gasped.
Not at the dinner table. No, really. I want to know.
His father cleared his throat and adjusted his steel-rimmed glasses. Thinking of marrying Kate? Kate laughed as Jack said, No! His folks sat at opposite ends, while Jack and his older sister Kate sat across from each other. Only his missing brother, Tom, kept it from being a full family meal. Jack didn't miss him. Tom was a pain.
Then where's this coming from?
Jack shrugged. Kids at school talk about Pineys.
He couldn't get those weird kids out of his mind. They seemed so different, like they had their own language, an unspoken one. And that lid on the barrel. Elvin couldn't budge it, but Levi just touched it, and it popped free.
It reminded Jack of the time Levi and Jake Schuett faced off in the calf a couple of weeks ago over some remark Jake had made about Pineys. Suddenly, a ketchup pack Jake was holding squirted all over him, and his lunch plate dumped in his lap. Jack had written it off as a spaz attack. He hadn't given it much thought, but now...
He wasn't expecting much information from his folks, but Kate was home on a laundry run from medical school. It was only in Stanford, barely 30 miles away, and maybe she'd know.
He glanced at her. Why is it bad?
Kate was slim, with pale blue eyes and faint freckles. After starting med school, she'd cut her long, blonde hair back to a short, almost boyish length. Jack still wasn't used to it.
She paused. Then said, It's bad because we all have defective recessive genes hidden in our DNA that are passed on from parent to child. Now, as long as that defective recessive gene is matched up with a working gene, all is well. But if a mother and a father both have the same recessive gene and each gives it to a child, that child could have problems. I saw an albino girl today. She nodded. Perfect example. Two normal-skinned parents, each carrying an albino gene, have a 1 in 4 chance of having an albino child. Family members tend to share a lot of the same recessives, and so inbreeding, when close relatives have children, increases the risk of genetic diseases, because the closer you're related, the greater the odds of matching up the same recessives in your kids.
Now the important question. But... Are all recessive genes bad? Could there be ones for, like, big muscles or a good memory?
Kate smiled.
You're thinking. That's good. Yes, plants and animals are bred for drought resistance and giving more milk and the like.
Well, in that case, inbreeding people could have some good effects, right?
Theoretically, yes. But for every Einstein or Muhammad Ali, you could get a number of kids with cystic fibrosis.
Or weird powers. Or maybe I read too much science fiction, Jack thought. Chapter 3. He awoke to the sound of someone whispering his name, coming from the window. He hopped out of bed and crossed his darkened room. High moon lit the grinning face on the far side of the screen.
Levi?
Would you believe they came back again tonight?
Jack felt his heart rate kick into high gear.
They took the bait?
Hook, line, and sinkhole. Figured, since it was your idea, you ought to come see.
We got the car.
Wanna? Be right there. He pulled on jeans and a rugby shirt, stepped into his Vans, then unlatched the screen and slipped into the night. Levi led him around the corner to where Elvin and Suri were waiting in the buggy, Suri behind the wheel. No, wrench. Her white hair looked silver in the moonlight. They hopped in, and Suri took off without a word. At least she couldn't stare at him. The pines were practically in Jack's backyard, but she entered along a path he didn't know. She made seemingly random turns through the trees, but appeared to know where she was going. Finally, she stopped in a small clearing.
Gotta walk from here, Levi said, else they'll hear us.
The four of them hopped out, and this time Suri led the way, single file down a deer path.
They fell for it, Jack, Levi said from behind him. Just like you said. I never would have thought of that in a million years. You got a twisted mind. I like that.
Jack enjoyed the praise, but thought the solution had been obvious. Whoever had dumped those barrels didn't know the pines. Otherwise, they wouldn't have needed to post reflectors. So Jack's idea had been to move the reflectors off the path to the dumping ground and onto a path that led to the cripple instead. He heard angry voices before he saw anyone. Suri slowed her pace, and gradually a glow began to grow through the trunks. They crouched as they neared the tree line. Jack peeked through the underbrush and saw a flatbed truck angled nose down into the cripple. Its headlights were still on and its motor running. A blue tarp covered whatever was stacked in its bed. Its front end sat bumper deep in the water, and its rear wheels had dug ruts in the soil from trying to reverse its way out. One man was cursing and swearing as he stood in the 2-foot-deep water and pushed against the front grill, while another gunned the engine and spun the tires.
Now that we've got 'em, Jack said, what do we do with them? Call the sheriff?
Levi shook his head.
No way. We bring in some grown-ups. They'll take care of them.
Take care of them? How?
Piney justice.
Piney justice. Jack had heard about that. He was going to say something, but right then, the one in the water gave up pushing and slammed a hand on the hood.
Ain't gonna happen, Tony.
Tony, dark, heavy-set, with a thick mustache, jumped out and began kicking the water in a rage.
Save it, man,
said the other guy as he splashed past him, heading toward the rim of the cripple.
We're gonna have to offload this stuff to get out of here.
How did this happen, Sammy? We marked a trail.
Must have made a wrong turn, or...
He stopped and looked around.
Or somebody moved the markers.
Tony stared at him.
Who?
Wise-ass locals, my guess. Probably out there right now, having a good laugh.
Uh-oh, Jack thought. Time to leave.
Yeah?
Tony reached into the truck cab and pulled out a revolver.
Well, laugh at this.
He began firing wildly. One of the slugs zipped through the brush between Jack and Suri, narrowly missing them. Jack froze in terrified shock, while Suri let out a shrill yelp of surprise.
There!
Sammy shouted, pointing their way. Levi yanked on Jack's arm.
Run!
Jack didn't need to be told twice, or even once. The next half minute became a riot of crouched running, snapping brush and branches, darkness ahead, shouting behind, and then a high-pitched scream that brought everything to an abrupt, panting halt.
Suri,
Levi said, looking back.
I thought she was... Oh, man. They got Suri.
He turned to Jack.
Go with Elle for help.
You're staying? He nodded.
Can't leave her.
Jack wavered. Why had he come here? He wanted to be home. Then Suri screamed again. I'll stay with you.
No way. You go.
Elle doesn't need help. Suri does.
L was already at the car, starting it up. He wasn't waiting. That settled it.
I don't get it,
Levi said as he turned and started back toward the cripple. What's there to get?
You don't owe her. She's not kin.
Jack couldn't see what that had to do with anything. He wished he stayed in bed, but he was here now. We came together, we leave together. Levi didn't reply. They were almost back to the cripple.
Come out, wherever you are, a voice was sing-songing. We got your ugly girlfriend.
Jack peeked through the brush. The moonlight and backwash from the headlights revealed Tony standing on the rim of the cripple by the rear of the truck. He had his gun in one hand and a fistful of Cerise's hair in the other. She looked terrified. Sammy, standing a few feet to his right, shouted,
The rest of you, get out here now. We ain't gonna hurt you. Just put you to work. You got us into this mess, so you're gonna get us out.
Jack saw three options. Help was on the way, so until it arrived, they either could do nothing, find ways to distract them, or show themselves, and do whatever they wanted.
Get out here, or this could get ugly,
Tony said, twisting Cerise's hair and making her wince.
You don't want to see how ugly.
Jack winced, too, and crossed doing nothing off the list. He decided on distraction. He could always show himself if that didn't work.
Stay here,
he whispered.
Gonna try something. Wait.
Levi grabbed for his arm, but Jack pulled out of reach. He moved counterclockwise along the tree line, feeling around the ground until he found a fist-size hunk of shale. Perfect. He backed up, cocked his arm, and let fly towards the truck. The rock bounced off the tarp with a gonging sound, then splashed in the water.
Son of a bitch!
Sammy yelled, flinching.
You guys deaf? Tony shouted. Remember what I said about things getting ugly?
Oh, no. Jack's gut knotted as he saw Tony yank Cerise backward. She lost her balance and fell into the water. Tony stayed with her and held her head under the surface as her arms and legs thrashed and splashed. It was only a couple of feet deep, but plenty enough to drown her.
She stays under till you come out, Tony yelled.
Jack couldn't take it. Only option three remained.
Okay! Okay!
His bladder ached to empty as he jumped out of the bushes with his hands raised. To his left, Levi also stepped out, hands high, saying,
Let her up!
As Sammy started toward them, Tony pointed the gun their way and grinned.
When I'm damn good and ready. You kids.
Ah!
He dropped the gun and released Cerise as he grabbed his right hand with his left.
She broke my finger!
Cerise sat up, choking and gasping and crying. Jack had seen one of her thrashing arms come near Tony's hand, but no way it touched him. She lurched to her feet and staggered away toward dry ground. Tony started after her.
You little... my gun!
He turned and bent, feeling around underwater. As Sammy turned to look at his buddy, Jack took off toward Cerise. He grabbed her outreached hand and pulled her up the bank of the cripple. Sammy started toward them.
Hey!
Suddenly, he tripped and fell face first into the water. But instead of rebounding to his feet, he stayed down and began kicking and thrashing as Cerise had. He couldn't seem to get up. Tony finally noticed.
What the hell are you doing?
He started toward Sammy, but tripped himself. He went down and stayed down, too.
Were they stuck in the mud?
No. Their arms and legs were free. It almost looked like they were being held down, but... Jack saw Levi on his knees, white-faced, eyes focused on the man in the cripple. As Jack headed for him, Cerise grabbed his arm.
Leave Levi be!
Jack pulled free. As he neared, he could see the boy's lips pulled back in a snarl. His face and hair dripped sweat, his shirt was soaked, and air hissed between his clenched teeth like he was bench-pressing twice his own weight.
Levi?
He glanced at Jack, and just then, the two men in the cripple got their heads back above water. But not for long. Before they could draw a full breath, they plunged their faces back beneath the surface. And then everything seemed to happen at once. Elvin roared out of the trees in the buggy, followed by a pickup full of rough-clothed men with shotguns. Levi let out a breath and slumped forward onto his hands. The two men and the cripple got their heads out of the water and sucked air. When they caught their breath and looked around, they found themselves staring into the headlights of the buggy and the pickup and down the muzzles of half a dozen shotguns. One of the piney men, tall, with a gray beard, and features that looked like they'd been taken apart and put back together wrong, had lifted the tarp and was looking at the barrels hidden beneath.
"Not good," he said, shaking his head. "Not good at all."
"You don't want to mess with us,"
Tony said, still panting.
"We're connected, if you know what I mean."
"I'm right sure of that," the old piney said. "And we'll want to know who to."
He swiveled, and his gaze fell on Jack.
"Who's this un?"
Friend of ours," Levi said, rising to his feet. He'd caught his breath. "He set the trap."
"Well, we're right grateful for that. But he ain't one of us. Take him back wherever he came from."
"What about them?" Jack said, pointing to Tony and Sammy.
"You forget about them. We're all gonna have us a nice chat. Then we'll send them home."
"But..." Levi grabbed his arm and pulled him away. "No questions. Let's go." El and Suri were already in the buggy. As soon as Jack and Levi settled on the rear couch, El put it into gear and they roared off. "What happened back there?" Jack said. He was feeling weak and shaky. That guy had almost drowned Suri, and he'd never been shot at before. Never dreamed it would ever happen, and never wanted it to happen again. Ever. Levi shook his head. "Nothing. And don't go yakking about it." "You kidding? Tell my folks I snuck out tonight to see some toxic dumpers we trapped and wound up getting shot at?" "Yeah, right. Soon as I get home, I'm going to run into their bedroom and blab all about it." Levi laughed.
"Okay."
Of course, he'd tell Wheezy. She'd eat it up. But he hadn't been talking about the dumpers. "I meant you. What did you do to those guys?" The smile vanished. "Nothing." "But I saw..." Levi stared straight ahead. "You saw a couple of guys slipping around on a mucky cripple bottom and getting stuck. That's all." Jack was sure it had been more than that. But what exactly? Suri turned to face him.
"Yeah. That's all it was, Jack. But what about you? What's your talent? Is it being able to hide? Is that why I can't see you?" What was she talking about?
"I don't have any talent."
"Maybe you just don't know about it yet. You're hiding something, but that's okay. You came back for me. I never expected that. I still can't see you, but I like you."
Jack had no idea how to respond to that, so he didn't. They dropped him off about a block from his house. As they raced off, he saw their bumper sticker flash in the moonlight. Piney Power. He had an idea why those kids liked the sound of it. Chapter 4.
"I can't believe all that happened without me,"
Wheezy said as they entered Jack's house through the kitchen. He'd waited till after school to tell her about it. "Believe me, you were better off at home." He shuddered at a vision of that Tony guy holding Wheezy's head underwater instead of Cerise's. "While it was happening, I wanted to be anywhere but there." As they stepped into the front room where his folks were watching the 6:30 news, a TV reporter said, The two bodies found inside those barrels of toxic waste have been identified.
Jack stiffened as he recognized the mugshots on the screen.
Anthony Lapamarda and Santo Sammy Carlopoli have long rap sheets. Their bodies were found outside a South Philly body shop this morning along with 24 barrels of toxic waste. More waste was found inside the body shop along with a number of stolen cars. The suspected chop shop.
He nudged Wheezy and whispered,
"That's them."
The old Piney's parting words came back.
"We're all gonna have us a nice chat. Then we'll send them home."
He hadn't mentioned how they'd be sent home. Jack glanced at Wheezy and found her staring back with wide, dark eyes.
"Piney Justice," he said, feeling a chill.
His father looked up.
"What?"
"Nothing." Dad pointed to the TV. "That's why we live out here, to get away from scum like that. You don't have to worry about running into any of their sort in these parts."
"I guess not, Dad. At least, not anymore."
The Night Hunter by Meg Cabot. Read by Amanda Ronconi.
Overton's was the only place that was hiring the day Nina found out her mother had lost her college fund. But if she wanted anything more than a secondary education, she had to go looking for a part-time job. So, Overton's it was, even though, ordinarily, Nina wouldn't have been caught dead in a preppy store like that. Which is why Nina was stuck working at the mall that Friday night with Angela Overton, who was, as usual, trying to get Nina to tell her where all the major parties were that weekend.
"I heard Lauren Vanderwall's parents are going to Boston for the weekend," Angie was saying as she hogged the only stool behind the register. "Misty Johnson and Feather Haynes were talking about it in the ladies." There'd been a big sale at Overton's, and Nina was tired from the rush of customers. Her feet hurt. She wouldn't have minded a turn on the stool. But Angela's parents owned Overton's, and if Nina didn't want Angela to complain to her mother about her, there wasn't much she could say in protest. She didn't think Mrs. Overton would fire her. Nina was one of Overton's best employees, but Mrs. Overton might reassign one of her valuable weekend shifts. Nina couldn't afford to lose either of those. Saturday and Sunday were the only 8-hour shifts she could take, because of school. Nina told herself she didn't care too much about not getting to sit down. She kept her mind off her sore feet by calling the mall radio station approximately every 15 minutes and asking them to play her favorite song, The Night Hunter. Jerry, who was on duty at the sound desk, kept saying, "No problem." But he never played it. Nina hadn't really expected him to, since The Night Hunter wasn't exactly the kind of song the Calder Mall played over its sound system. Still, it was a local favorite. Everyone in Eastport loved hearing stories about the Night Hunter, whether they were true or not. And Nina suspected the Eastport Police Department wished they weren't. Everyone was just as wild as she was about the song local band Witch Hunt had written about him. Nina's calling Jerry every quarter of an hour also served as a way to interrupt Angela as she droned on about Lauren Vanderwall's party. "Huh," Nina said now in response to Angela.
"You and Lauren are tight, right, Nina?" Angela asked. "You must be going to her party. It's tomorrow night. I heard Ryan Calder might be going. You know him, right? Or you've at least heard of him. Everybody's heard of him. He's so rich and hot. And I heard Lauren say he'd be dropping by. I've just got to meet him."
"Uh-huh," Nina said. Sometimes she said, "uh-huh," to Angie instead of "huh," to vary her responses. The only reason she bothered responding at all was that Angela's mother was Nina's boss. Nina thought Angela was spoiled beyond belief. Look at the thing with the stool. Angela hadn't once offered to let Nina sit on it in 4 hours. "Hang on a minute." Nina picked up the phone and dialed the number for the Calder Mall radio station. When Jerry at the desk picked up, she said, "Hey, it's Nina at Overton's again. When are you guys going to play The Night Hunter by Witch Hunt?"
"It's next up on the rotation."
Jerry lied. They both knew it was a lie, but Nina said, "Oh, great. Thanks, Jerry," and hung up. "I mean, it's not that I want to meet him for his money or anything," Angela went on. "I know his family built this mall and, well, everything in Eastport practically. It's just, he's so cute. Those blue eyes. And I feel so sorry for him with his parents getting killed last year. I know I could make him feel better." "I bet you think you could," Nina thought. "And it has way more to do with his bank account than those blue eyes of his." Not that Nina knew Ryan Calder that well either. She'd seen him at a few parties, but had felt weird about approaching him because he'd always been surrounded by girls just like Angie, trying to get into his wallet. But she knew she'd recognize those piercing eyes of his anywhere, especially since she'd seen them so many times, staring up at her from the pages of the Eastport News. There were always photos of him showing up, cutting the ribbon to a new hospital wing paid for by the foundation he'd started in his parents' memory. "Look," Angie was saying, "I could give you a lift tomorrow night, to Lauren's, if you want." "Can't," Nina said. "I'm working here tomorrow night." "I know," Angie said. "I meant after work. I'll pick you up and take you to the party." "I don't know, Ange," Nina said idly, leaning on the counter and gazing out of the store, across the atrium, where the mall's waterfall cascaded down from the second floor in front of the glass elevators. Mothers with young children, tired of pushing strollers, often sat there to rest, giving their toddlers pennies to throw into the pool. Across the pool, Eastport Bank was beginning to shut down for the night. Nina watched as the tellers put their closed signs up at their booths. "Your mom's got me on the schedule to do inventory all day. I don't know if I'll feel much like going to a party. I'll probably be pretty tired." Nina didn't know why she was giving Angela such a hard time. Maybe it was because Angela hadn't given her a turn on the stool all night. "Please?" Angela looked desperate. "Look, I'm not invited to Lauren's party. You are. If you go with me tomorrow night, I'll give you a ride home tonight, too. Then you won't have to take the bus home. You know how unsafe it is, waiting all alone at that bus stop here after all the stores close and everyone goes home." Nina did know. That's why she'd been thinking that what she needed was a boyfriend. A boyfriend with a car, who could pick her up after work. It was no use saving up to buy her own car. Thanks to her mom, she needed to save every penny for tuition in the fall. But a boyfriend, that was doable. As she watched Rick, the security guard, begin to pull down the gates in front of the bank, she went over in her head the various boys she knew. Were any of them really boyfriend material? Not so much. Nina had her schoolwork to worry about after all, and this job. She didn't have time to cater to the whims of some guy, especially some spoiled rich guy like Ryan Calder. Unless, of course, she ended up with a guy like, well, the Night Hunter. But of course that was ridiculous. The Night Hunter didn't have a girlfriend. How did the song go? "He rides alone, just a rolling stone." Yeah, and Rolling Stones didn't hang out with high school girls, even seniors who are only a few credits away from graduating. But if he'd really saved all those people from those violent criminals just by showing up at the right time and looking intimidating... "Just say you'll come with me," Angela said, breaking in on Nina's thoughts. "I'll get to the party and you'll get home safe. I'll feel a lot less guilty about leaving you waiting at that dark bus stop." Nina thought that if Angela were really as nice as she pretended to be, she'd just give her a ride home without making her promise to escort her to Lauren's party first. Nina's house was actually on the way to Angela's, so it wasn't like it would be any trouble. But she supposed this was how rich people got that way, never giving away anything for free. The Overtons were among the richest families in Eastport, rumored to be second wealthiest only to Ryan Calder, sole heir to the Calder family fortune now that his parents had been killed in that horrible burglary gone awry last year. Yet Nina had noticed Angela was almost always first in line whenever any other store in the mall was having a free giveaway of anything.
That's okay, Nina said, lifting up the phone to call the Calder Mall radio station again and so end her conversation with Angela. I'll grab a ride with Katie from the bank or someone.
What did she want to go to a stupid party at Lauren's for, anyway? None of those people wanted to hang out with her anymore, now that she was broke. It was better for Angela to learn now that Lauren and those guys, the Ryan Calders of the world, would only be your friend when you were on top of the world. As soon as you hit bottom, like Nina had, thanks to her mom, it was, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. It was as she was waiting for Jerry to pick up that Nina noticed something curious happening across the atrium. A tall man in a long black trench coat had come striding down the concourse, heading with decided purpose toward the bank, the gates of which Rick hadn't fully pulled down. Something was wrong with his face. At first, Nina couldn't figure out what it was. Then, a second later, she figured it out. He was wearing a mask. A terrible, grinning clown mask. It was as she realized this that the tall man ducked beneath the half-lowered gate in front of the Eastport Bank. When Rick, the security guard, stepped forward to say something to him, the man pulled something long and skinny from the depths of the black leather trench coat and pointed it at him. That's when Rick put his hands in the air. "Oh!" Nina cried, a physical shock seeming to jolt through her, not unlike the time she accidentally stuck her finger in the electrical socket while plugging in the toaster. "Oh my God!"
"This is Jerry,"
Jerry said, answering the phone she still held to her ear. "Oh my God, Jerry," Nina said into the phone. "He's robbing the bank. Someone's robbing the mall branch of Eastport Bank."
"Who is this?"
Jerry asked.
"Nina, is that you?"
"It's me," Nina said. Her lips felt numb. She watched as the man with the gun made Rick lie down on the bank floor. "Call 911. Someone's robbing the bank."
"Are you kidding me?"
Jerry wanted to know.
"Is this a joke because I wouldn't play that Night Hunter song?"
"No, it's not a joke," Nina cried, even as Angela, who'd seen what was going on, had dived behind the counter and was tugging on Nina's arm to do the same. "It's happening right now. There's a man in a clown mask wearing a black leather trench coat robbing the bank. He has a gun. Call 911 right now." "Oh, never mind. I'll do it." Slamming the phone down into its cradle, Nina picked it back up and dialed, then handed the phone to Angela, crouched behind the register.
What are you doing?"
Angela demanded, staring at the phone as if it were a snake about to bite her.
"I'm going out there to see what I can do to help," Nina said. "Tell 911 what's going on." "Are you insane?"
Angela demanded as Nina slipped out from behind the counter.
"It's him. It's the Night Hunter."
"No, it isn't," Nina said, instantly incensed.
"The Night Hunter helps people. He doesn't rob them." "But they say he wears a mask, and that guy..."
"Night Hunter wears a mask so he won't be recognized and punished for being a vigilante," Nina snapped. Of all the people she could have been forced to work with, why did it have to be Angela Overton, the stupidest girl on the planet? "And it's a black mask, not a clown mask. Now stay here."
Where are you going?"
Angela whispered.
"What are you going to do? You can't do anything to help those people. You're not the Night Hunter."
Nina wished she were. She wished she were the Night Hunter. She'd stop the man holding up the bank. She'd force her mother to get her college money back from the boyfriend she'd given it to. She'd also have a cool motorcycle to ride around on. The first thing she'd do as the Night Hunter would be to quit working at Overton's.
"I'm not the Night Hunter," she said, "but I can try to make sure that man doesn't hurt anyone."
The Night Hunter did it. Why couldn't she? Her heart was pounding in her chest. How she was going to do this, she had no idea.
"Just talk to the operator. Have they picked up?" "You're crazy," Angela said, shaking her head, her eyes glittering. "Just stay here. You can't leave me alone. I'll tell my mother."
Through the phone, Nina could hear a voice asking, "Ma'am, are you there? Ma'am, this is 911. How can I help you?"
"Tell them what's going on,"
Nina said, nodding to the phone Angela still clutched in her hands.
"I have to go see what I can do to help. You'll be all right here. Just tell the police to hurry."
"Don't leave me," Angela wailed. But Nina was already walking out of the store and heading around the waterfall and pool toward the bank. It was odd listening to the music playing over the mall's sound system, the light rock Jerry always played when it was late. He'd only put on the good stuff now,
when the stores had begun closing and customers were starting to head home. Tonight, while watching a man in a trench coat and clown mask forcing the bank tellers to come out from their booths.
That's Katie,
Nina thought, as she saw the man in the mask grab one teller who hadn't moved quickly enough and push her roughly to the floor. Katie just had a baby last spring. Shoppers were coming toward her end of the mall, and they had kids. Nina knew she had to do something. She had to do something to warn people away from this end of the mall. That's what the Night Hunter would do. He'd try to help. Why hadn't Jerry, stupid Jerry, made an announcement over the sound system? Had he even bothered calling the police? Then, as she glanced around in desperation, she saw it. Of course. The fire alarm on the wall by the courtesy telephone. This wasn't a fire, but the system would go off mall-wide, and shoppers would know to evacuate. She'd stay put and warn them not to use this exit. Nina ran for the alarm and pulled it. A split second later, the alarm was sounding in ear-splitting whoops, accompanied by flashing strobe lights for the hearing impaired. The shoppers who'd been approaching her end of the mall stopped in their tracks. Waving her arms, she signaled for them to go back the way they'd come. They turned and did so, confused but obedient. It was working. She'd done it. She could barely hear herself think, but she'd done it. The bank robber wasn't bound to appreciate it very much, but who cared what he thought? She'd saved innocent people from getting caught up in an armed bank heist, just like the Night Hunter would have done. She glanced at Overton's to see what Angela was doing, but there was no sign of her, still hiding behind the register counter. Well, that was all right, as long as she'd let emergency services know what was going on. Inside Eastport Bank, everyone was lying on the floor with their hands over their heads. They all appeared to be breathing. Nina hadn't heard any gunshots. There was no sign of the robber. Nina assumed he was wherever the money was, stuffing it into his pockets or whatever bags he'd brought along. As long as help came soon, she didn't... That's when the arm, rock hard like iron, clamped around her throat, and she was dragged backward until she was pressed up against a long, muscular body. Something small and circular was held against her temple. This, Nina realized, just wasn't her day.
"Are you the one who set off that damned alarm?"
A hoarse voice rasped close beside her ear. Nina flinched. She didn't need to turn her head to know who had grabbed hold of her. She could see a bit of red clown fluff sticking out past the mask from the corner of one eye, just like she could see the gun he was pressing to her head.
"Yes,"
she managed to croak. It was hard to talk with the man in the trench coat's arm pressing so tightly against her throat. She'd instinctively thrown up both hands in order to try to pull that arm away, but it was no use. It was like trying to move a 2-ton boulder.
"You'd better get out of here. The police are on their way,"
she hoped.
"Not without a hostage,"
Clown Mask hissed. It was kind of hard to hear him over the whooping of the fire alarm, but his mouth was so close to her ear she could feel his hot breath singeing her skin.
"You really don't want to take me as your hostage," Nina advised him. "I'd make a terrible hostage."
"Yeah?"
Clown Mask sounded amused.
"Who do you suggest I take instead? One of your friends from inside the bank?"
Nina shook her head, her heart pounding. Not Katie. She had that new baby. And not Rick, either. He had a heart condition, and kids at home, too.
"What about your friend in the dress shop there, huh?"
Clown Mask breathed. He was pushing her as he spoke, pushing her down the concourse, past Overton's, where she could see the top of Angela's head peeking out over the counter, the telephone still clutched to one ear.
"Should we go in there and swap you for her? Would you like that better, huh?"
"No,"
Nina said sullenly. Whatever Clown Mask had planned for her, and Nina didn't kid herself that it was going to be anything too pleasant, Angela wouldn't last a minute. And if she herself happened to live through it, and Nina wasn't betting she was going to, it would scar her way less than it would Angela. Because Angela, whose loving parents only made her work this single weekend shift at their shop to teach her responsibility, had never known hardship in her life. except the hardship of having not been invited to Lauren Vanderwall's party. Nina hoped Angela would have a very nice time there, without her.
I didn't think so,
Clown Mask said, with a low sound in his throat that Nina could only assume was a chuckle. He continued to push her along past the waterfall, toward the side exits. They burst through the twin doors together, and Nina was greeted with a blast of cold night air in her face, air that was only going to get colder since she didn't have a coat on, and the welcome relief of no more fire alarm sound. She was also greeted by the wail of a police siren as a squad car skidded to a halt in the parking lot in front of them. Someone had gotten through to emergency services, at least. Clown Mask, who'd loosened his grip on her throat only slightly, now tightened it. A young police officer flung himself out from behind the wheel and, using the car as a shield, pointed his service revolver at them.
Stay where you are, he yelled,
his voice strangely soft after the loudness of the alarm inside.
Put down your weapon, nice and slow.
I have a better idea,
Clown Mask said to the police officer.
You put down your weapon, or I'll blow a hole in this girl's head. How about that?
The police officer, who looked barely old enough to have graduated from high school, let alone the academy, seemed confused. Nina could hear other sirens in the distance, but it sounded like it would be a while before they got anywhere close.
That's what I thought, Clown Mask said,
sounding smug.
Now, this young lady and I are going to walk over to my car, real slow, and you're going to let us. Or, like I said, I'll splatter her brains all over the front doors of Calder Mall. And I don't think your chief would like it if I did that. Do you?
The cop said nothing. He continued to keep his gun pointed at them, however, as Clown Mask dragged her toward his getaway car, a beat-up four-door sedan parked illegally along the curb right next to where they'd been standing. If there'd actually been a cop patrolling the mall's parking lot, he'd have gotten a ticket and been towed. But all the cops were busy on the far side of town, trying to stop real crimes. The kind of crimes the Night Hunter had finally gotten so sick of reading about in the paper, he'd put on a mask and decided to go and fight them himself. And now look what was happening over at the mall. Listen, Nina said in a low voice to her captor. Let me go now. He won't shoot you. He's too scared. And you'll make better time without me.
Nice try, sweetie,
Clown Mask said with a chuckle.
Now get in the car.
Nina knew the last thing she ought to do was get inside that car. But from the way she'd seen him push Katie down back in the bank, she also knew that he wasn't going to be shy about using that gun, even with a cop standing a few dozen yards away. She let him shove her into the passenger seat of the sedan. It's all right, she told herself. I'll jump out when we slow down to take a corner. It would hurt, but it would be better than whatever waited for her at the end of this. Then Clown Mask was in the driver's seat, one hand on the wheel while the other continued to point the gun at her head. As they took off, his tires spun in the bits of sand left over from a recent snowfall. Nina barely had time to buckle her seatbelt before he accelerated. He laughed bitterly at this, as if to say she had more important things to worry about than being in a car crash, which she supposed was true. Then, with a spray of sand and gravel, the sedan careened from the parking lot, heading down 95 and away from the mall, the lights of which grew faint in the distance. Nina held onto her seatbelt, conscious of the gun still pointed at her temple. Not yet, she told herself. Soon. He has to slow down sometime. And then she'd jump and run for all she was worth. You're never going to make it, she told Clown Mask as he swerved to merge into evening traffic. She was sure no one suspected that they were slowing down for a psychotic bank robber. Clown Mask just chuckled.
In this town, with these cops, watch me.
He had a point. Eastport's police department was stretched to the limit, with barely enough men and women to cover routine patrols, let alone any additional emergencies that might occur. The city was bankrupt, and the mayor, in his infinite wisdom, had cut back on city workers first. The police department had been the first to see major layoffs.
I'll be home counting my payoff before Jeopardy, Clown Mask said with a sneer.
And what about me? Nina asked, in a tight voice. She knew she wasn't going to like his answer. Still, she was hoping he'd lie to her. He didn't.
You?
He used the mouth of the pistol to push back some of her dark hair so he could get a better look at her face.
You? I'm starting to like.
Oh no, thought Nina. They were going 80 miles an hour down the fast lane. There was no way she could jump out at this speed and survive. And death, to Nina, did not seem preferable to the alternative at this point. There still might be opportunities for escape when they got to his house or wherever they were going. There was still hope. He liked her, or thought she was pretty, or whatever. She could get out of this, if she played her cards right. She could still get out of this. There was still a chance she might live.
What the hell?
Clown Mask asked a second later, abruptly removing the gun from her hair and glancing urgently into the rearview mirror. Nina looked back, but couldn't see what was alarming him. She'd hoped to see the red glare of police sirens, but instead she saw only the single headlight of a motorcycle. True, it seemed to be tailgating them, but that wasn't anything to get upset about. Then, she remembered. He rides alone, just a rolling stone. The Night Hunter was rumored to ride a motorcycle sometimes. Other times, at least according to eyewitnesses who swore they weren't making it up, he drove some kind of armored vehicle, like an SUV tank. But it was too much to hope that the Night Hunter had somehow managed to find them, out of all the cars on the interstate, when even the cops hadn't been able to. Nina swallowed down the sudden hope that had swelled inside her. She had experienced far too much disappointment in recent months to allow her spirits to be crushed that way again. There was only one person in this life, she knew, who you could count on. One. And that was yourself. If she was going to get out of this, she would have to do it on her own.
This guy's riding my ass,
Clown Mask muttered, switching lanes abruptly. But Nina could tell by the high beam in the rearview mirror and the loud roar behind them that the move had done no good.
What's with this guy?
Clown Mask demanded, and switched lanes again. The motorcycle stayed right behind him, the roar from its engine seeming to envelop them, reverberating in Nina's chest. Nina couldn't help it. She began to feel hopeful. It was an emotion she hadn't allowed herself to feel in a long, long time. Maybe, she said. It's the Night Hunter.
What?
Clown Mask asked, distractedly, as he tried to make his way back to the passing lane. You know, Nina said. The Night Hunter. That vigilante who's been making citizens' arrests of criminals the cops haven't been able or had time to arrest. He left that crime boss Vincent Gamboni tied up in his own car by the docks last week, along with a boatload of $700,000 worth of stolen goods. You're kind of small potatoes, Nina added, compared to him. But then you are adding kidnapping to grand larceny, which are both felonies.
Shut the hell up,
Clown Mask said, pushing a button to bring the driver's side window down. I'm just saying, Nina said. A known drug dealer who's been wanted for murder and aggravated assault and on the run for 3 years? The Night Hunter found him and brought him in with no shots fired. He's that good. And you think you're going to get away? In your little clown mask? Nina laughed. She couldn't help it. Which was when Clown Mask leaned out the driver's side window and fired a shot behind them, in the direction of the relentlessly pursuing motorcycle. The sound of the report was so loud that Nina screamed and flung both hands over her ears. What are you doing? She shrieked. Are you trying to get us both killed?
Drive,
Clown Mask said. Only he'd ripped off his mask in order to take better aim at his prey, and now Nina could see his irregular features, the badly reset broken nose, the two small, beady eyes blinking at her with a glint of desperation.
I'm going to kill this bastard. Take the wheel.
Before Nina had time to regret what she'd said, she'd only meant to scare him, after all. Her captor had slithered halfway out the driver's side window and was unloading his pistol in the direction of the man on the motorcycle. If she didn't want them to careen into the cars on either side of them, Nina had no choice but to seize the wheel of the car and slam her foot on the gas.
but since she could no more allow him to kill the Night Hunter than she could allow him to kill her, she yanked violently on the wheel, swerving right. And then, praying to a god she wasn't entirely sure she believed in anymore, she cut across three lanes of traffic. Horns blared as cars veered out of their way, barely missing them.
"What the hell are you doing?"
Her captor slithered back inside the car to shout at her. He seized the wheel, wrestling it from her grasp. But Nina wouldn't give up. She gave it another violent tug while pressing down with all her might on the gas, aiming the car for a copse of trees she could see rushing toward them from the darkness alongside the road. All the while, she was praying, "Please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. Please don't let me die." Clown Mask responded by striking her hard against the side of her head with the butt of his gun. Instinctively, she released the wheel and let go of the gas, seizing the side of her face and recoiling in pain and confusion as her vision swam in blackness. When her eyesight cleared a split second later, she experienced several agonizingly long moments of clarity as the car zoomed off the highway, bounced over the shoulder, and dove into the trees toward which she'd aimed it. She only had time to fling up both arms in a useless attempt to protect her head before the car landed with a stunningly hard force, a deafening crunch of metal, and a splinter of shattering glass. And this time, when the blackness came, it consumed her. When Nina opened her eyes, she heard the sound of cars passing in the distance, and somewhere closer by, the gentle cascade of running water. Her head ached, and it took a few seconds for her vision to focus. When it finally did, the first thing she saw was a pair of blue eyes staring at her from a field of darkness. At first, she thought she must be in a cave or a movie theater. Why else would it be so dark? Then she realized that it was nighttime, and she was outside. There was something warm over her body, but her face felt the chill, and so did the places where her body connected with the cold, hard ground. She also realized that the reason the blue eyes appeared to be looking at her from a field of darkness was that they were peering at her from behind two holes. The man kneeling beside her was wearing a black rubber mask. She gave a start, and the man, who she realized was cradling her upper body, trying to keep her head supported, said, in a low voice that was more rasp than whisper,
"An ambulance is on the way. You're going to be all right. Just keep still."
Nina wasn't sure she believed him. She hurt all over. She tried moving her legs. It would be just her luck if she turned out to be paralyzed, and was relieved to find that she could bend both knees with some effort.
"Hey,"
the man with the black mask rasped, sounding as if he were laughing a little.
"I thought I said to keep still."
Which was all well and good for him to say, but he hadn't been in that car with a gun pointed to his head a few minutes. Had it only been minutes ago?
"Where is he?"
Nina demanded, turning her head. Big mistake. Waves of pain shot through it.
"He's gone,"
the man in the mask said. Another man in a mask, Nina thought with a groan. Too many masks for one night.
"Don't worry about him. You're safe now."
Nina couldn't see the wreckage of Clown Mask's car, but she could smell it, the acrid smoke filling the night air.
"Is he dead?"
she asked, hopefully.
"No,"
he said, and again there was a chuckle in his voice.
"He can't have gotten far. Once help comes for you, I'll look for him."
Nina tensed. "You should go. You should look for him now."